You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
What's the ACT Party's objection to Paul Goulter's appointment?
So I think firstly we need to acknowledge the role that Air New Zealand plays for New Zealand. It is a hugely important entity to how the rest of the world views us. And I think part of what has made it successful is that it has been well governed. And one of the issues going forward is to continue to be a well governed entity. It needs to have the best people on the board. And our objection is that the minister, Grant Robertson, wrote a letter to the other members of the board, the other shareholders, and said that he would like to be involved in the board renewal process, which went against his earlier letter to Air New Zealand, said that he didn't want anything to do with that part. And I think that was the right thing to do. So while he's changed his mind, which is a huge departure from what he had previously said, we now end up with a union rep from NZEI, which is one of the Labour Party's closest aligned unions, now on the board of Air New Zealand. And I think the question that we all need to ask is, does this person have the best expertise to run an airline? And I don't think we have heard enough information from the chair of Air New Zealand, but also from the minister, that Paul Goulter is in fact one of the best people deemed to run an airline. All that they have said in defence of the appointment is that Air New Zealand works closely with unions.
Goulter has had decades of experience in workplace relations. Isn't that an advantage for an airline, as you say, many of whose workers belong to unions?
Well, it's easy to say lots of people will belong to the union. But does that mean that this person who is a union rep should be placed onto the board of an airline? And one of the tricky parts about this is that we have not heard anything to say that he has been appointed on merit. All that has been said is that Air New Zealand works closely with unions, so therefore Paul Goulter from a union will be put on the board. I think we need more information about why Paul Goulter in particular was put on the board without referring to Labour's union connection, because one of the elements that makes New Zealand such an attractive place for people to want to come, to want to send money to, is in fact that we have a high level of transparency. We have extremely low levels of corruption. We do not want to see ourselves become a world where the minister is able to appoint people that are his union mates to really important entities in New Zealand.
But Grant Robertson, he is a member of the Labour Party, who is the majority shareholder. Why shouldn't a majority shareholder have a say in who it wants on the board?
Well, it's a rapid departure from what Minister Robertson has said in the past. So Grant Robertson in 2018 wrote a letter to the airline and expressed that a shareholding minister in normal circumstances would not put forward candidates for elections as directors and would just support the other board's candidates for election and re-election. So that was a very hands-off approach. And I think that was the right approach to take, because I don't think we want to see the politicisation and ministers getting involved in those board appointments. What has happened now is that he has actively written back to the airline and said, actually, you know what, I changed my mind. I would like to be involved. And I think we need to question why that is, and also why it is that after he's written this letter, Paul Goulter, who is a union rep from one of Labour's closely aligned unions, has been placed on the board. There needs to be more transparency, because this is the sort of going into corruption that you'd usually expect from another country, not New Zealand, which is deemed to be one of the least corrupt countries in the world.
In the April letter of expectation, Robertson said he expected Air New Zealand to enhance its role as a leader for best practice workplace relations. Do you support that objective?
I think it's important that the minister shouldn't be telling the airline what it expects from other shareholders and the board of Air New Zealand. I think while it's the majority shareholder, we don't want to get into a situation where this entity, Air New Zealand, which is hugely important to New Zealand, to how the rest of the world perceives us, starts to make decisions based on what the minister in a ministerial capacity wants the company to look like. The shareholders should have a duty to provide the best service to the rest of the company, and that is not by getting involved in how the company should be appointing its board. I think there is really important that we do ask that question of accountability, of why is it that this person was appointed? If it is in fact that this person has been appointed on merit, then they should say so, rather than it's because he has a union connection.
COVID-19 caused a huge number of Air New Zealand staff to lose their jobs. Do you think Galta's appointment will help the company enhance its workplace relations?
And I think that is an interesting question, and one that does need to be asked. Of course, people did lose their jobs under COVID, and that is hugely regrettable. And that's a part of the fact that the airline wasn't able to fly around the rest of the world. But companies that have laid off staff, And they have done a good job at that, they do have those union reps that they do work with. The issue here is whether that should then be placed on the board. And so you don't have, for example, the union rep for Air New Zealand being placed on the board here. You have, in fact, somebody who has extremely close ties to the Labour Party and to the minister being placed on the board. I think the real question is, can they defend the appointment based on merit?
Do you agree that robust, independent journalism is a cornerstone of our democracy?
I completely agree. I think we have to ask the question, what sort of world do we want to live in? And I want to live in a world where journalists are able to hold the government accountable. And that means that they need to be free and independent, because that's the only way that we're able to ensure that journalists are writing articles that are genuinely in the public's interest. We know that there have been some funding issues with journalism, but I believe that what the government has done here in this case by giving $55 million in a journalism fund to journalists is not the way to solve the problem, because we end up in a situation where you have a competitive market with journalists who are trying to get the best stories, and they are getting rules placed upon them by the government by taking this money. For example, with one particular outlet being given nearly $100,000 specifically to report on the government's Provincial Growth Fund program, where you end up with journalists taking on taxpayer money to then promote government policies rather than hold those policies accountable. That is not a situation that we should be getting into, because if one media outlet is taking on board that money, there is not an incentive for another journalism entity to not take that money. They're at a disadvantage. So naturally, they want to take some of that money too. And we end up in a situation where the outlets that are supposed to be holding the government accountable are getting funded by the government. But they're not just getting funded. There are rules attached to the funding. So we're getting promotional material, things pushed out by the government, what they want journalists to be reporting on, rather than journalists being fair and freely able to hold the government accountable.
If you say that government funding may sway journalists, then aren't you saying the advertising that is currently funding most news outlets is already swaying journalism? What is the solution?
I think what here is the difference is that if you have private entities putting advertising on, you know, on stuff for the Herald, you can see that. You can see that it's paid promotional material. What the government has done with this $55 million fund is it's not, I guess, what you're deemed to be paid promotional material. What it's doing is you're getting in money to pay your journalists, but you're specifically being told by the government what articles you can or cannot write. And if I take that example that I just mentioned, if you have the government putting out $3 billion of funding on a program called the Provincial Growth Fund, and then you're then saying to journalists, hey, if you want some funding from us. Here is a particular program that we'd love you to write about. I don't think that's right, because you're asking journalists to take money to promote a specific policy that the government wants you to write about, rather than just being able to write about whatever you'd like. And where this gets into strife is that is not what we would expect of journalism. We would expect journalists to be asking hard questions and holding the government accountable to the policy promises. This is in fact doing the opposite by asking journalists to specifically report on what the government wants them to.
The funding is also supporting journalism training as well as other initiatives that support the future of the profession. Do you see any issue with that?
I see a huge issue in the government taking money, giving it to new graduates from journalism and saying that this money is to upskill journalists. There was one particular journalist who I know our leader, David Seymour, had spoken to, who said, well, if that's the case, then all of the new journalists should be asking for their tuition fees back because they obviously didn't learn enough when they were at university. And I think that is a real problem. We should not be encouraging upskilling of recent graduates through taxpayer money when in fact that was the role of the tuition that they received.
If in ACT's view the government shouldn't fund journalism, at the moment journalism is facing quite a hard time with money and with funding. What is the solution if not the government? Where would they get the money from?
I think it is an important question to ask, how do we fund journalism? And I see that we've got a range of different ways that are popping up with, you know, crowdsourcing. You've got Stuff asking for money on their platforms. New Zealand Herald has premium content. That's going to be an ongoing issue of how do we fund journalism long term. The specific issue that we have with the government funding it is not so much that the government has just given them money. The real issue here is that it comes with rules attached to it. So the government in particular is not just saying, well, here is a slush fund of money, do with it what you will. It's got specific criteria that is attached to it. Now, I think that gets us into a whole range of issue, and I hate to come back to that same specific example, but that is the way that the government is leading, where it is saying, here is a specific policy that we want to promote, so we're willing to pay for journalism to promote the policy and the objectives of the government that we want people to see. And that's stuff that you'd see in like third world countries, not in New Zealand.
So how
the issue of how things would be funded over time is an ongoing issue, but we're seeing people in a competitive marketplace asking that question of themselves as well, with people with subscription services going up. And I do understand that the New Zealand Herald, with its subscription service, is actually doing a good job there.
So how do we create unbiased journalism in a time when there is no money in journalism?
Well, it's a really good question. And I think one of the issues is that if we do believe that journalism should be free and unbiased so it is able to hold the government accountable, because that's in the best interest of the public. Now, we do actually want to know what the government is doing, why it's doing it, and if it says or promises New Zealand public something, that it delivers on it. We need to have that check and balance on the people who are in power. When we have the government specifically dishing out funding just so it can promote its own material, we get into a really tricky situation. Bias is always going to be there in some form from specific journalists, but I think that can be counteracted, but it's definitely not by the government giving funding.
BFM, for example, we're a small independent news outlet that is eligible for this public funding, and arguably without the support of public funds and advertising, we don't have a future.
Well, was that a question?
In terms of, you know, funding, what would be the solution if not from the government?
Well, I think there have been some solutions. I mean, if you look at News Hub, for example, that is not publicly funded. That's done through a corporate. And I think certain sponsorship does go some way to ensure that we do have good journalism in New Zealand. The issue that we have is that I wouldn't want to see BFM, if we take a BFM-specific example, promoting specific material that the government has asked for. And I don't think it would be right if BFM became dependent on government funding. And then the government also stipulated to say, because we've given you this funding, we'd really love it if you could, you know, if every segment say something about a government policy that we want you to promote. I don't think that would be right.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95bfm.com/bcasts.